Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Campionato di calcio italiano.
Everyone, and welcome to the Forza Italian Football Podcast. It is week 6 of Serie A, and in case you haven't noticed yet, I am not Connor Clancy. I am Nicholas Carroll, filling in for everyone's favourite Irishman while he goes gallivanting around in Toronto, I believe, Canada. Not sure why, but there you go. I was there for some reason. I've been left in charge, so I'll be doing my best today. But to help me in my first time at the helm, I have a fellow Australian countryman and fellow Melbournean, actually, Vito Doria, here to assist me. So, Vito, how are things?
Yeah, good, Nick. This should be a fascinating experience. So I've been used to Connor being the host, and before him, I was used to Dov Schiavone hosting. So this should be an exciting experience. And also, we have a new guest, too.
Indeed, we do, making her debut, of course. You may have seen her on the FIF YouTube page in a number of videos over the last year. It's our favourite Neapolitan, Caterina Mira. Kat, welcome to the podcast. Very happy to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me tonight, and happy to talk about Serie A with you guys. Looking forward to it.
Well, let's get started with, we'll kind of look at the top of the table, let's say, Juventus and Napoli. Now, it is, I believe I saw a stat, it's the first time in Serie A history that two teams are on a maximum amount of points after 6 matches. So just quickly on the games themselves, Napoli came from behind to beat Spal 3-2. Farsi Ghulam was arguably the man of the match in that, providing the inch-perfect cross for Jose Callejon, before quite an incredible solo run to grab the winner himself. And then for Juventus, it was pretty much another routine day at the office, beating Torino 4-0. It was an early goal for Paulo Dybala, which was soon followed by somewhat of a moment of madness from Daniele Baselli, providing somewhat of a fly kick to Miralem Pjanic, getting a second yellow and pretty much condemning Torino to the loss. So I will start with you, Kat, because you are our new guest. So for Napoli, of course, you are our Neapolitan born and bred. So while it wasn't overly convincing against Spal, they're still getting those results. So, I mean, how do you see their season so far? And is there still a lot of improvement for this team?
Yeah, for sure. The thing that is good is that Napoli is now with 70 consecutive away games undefeated, and it's a great, great result. But against Spal, I can say that it has been the most suffered win for the Azzurri at the moment. And indeed, I have some doubts also for the trio, Diawara, Zielinski, Hamsik, all together in the midfield, that probably didn't work also against Shakhtar Donetsk in Champions League. So I think the limit now probably is that not everyone are on top of the, their form, and probably Jorginho and Alan now are more than essential for the team. And however, apart from the individual issues that could be easy resolvable, the mistake that Napoli is still doing is starting the first minutes of the game not convincing, and so always giving away the first half, for example. And we've seen with Lazio, and we see also yesterday, on Saturday, sorry, against Spal, and also against Shakhtar. And in Champions could be really a problem. But I believe that the difference from last season is that now the Azzurri believe more in themselves and also have the desire of never give up. And so the good thing is that they are responding well from their mistakes. And I think that's the key for this year.
Of course, I am going back a week ago now, but I just wanted to ask quickly, how many times have you watched that Mertens goal from?
During the night, probably 10 times. And the following day.
And then dreaming about it.
Dreaming, yeah.
Okay, well, Vito, I'll go to you. Of course, I didn't want to focus too much on the Napoli and Juve matches themselves, but rather the race for the Scudetto, almost, you could say, while it's still very early days. But in your eyes, who has, obviously, the neck and neck at the moment on maximum points, but who has the potential to actually go up on another level and, I don't know, take the advantage in that possible race for the Serie A title this season?
I have a funny feeling I'm going to end up sounding like a fence sitter here, because I still think it's a bit hard to tell. Although I do believe that this is Napoli's time to finally win that third Scudetto, I still believe that Juve is probably the one that can still improve on the basis of what we've seen against Torino. Although the Derby della Morte was easily won because of Baselli's kung fu kick, if you like, I thought it was one of the more fluid performances that I had seen in the Allegri era. And one of the big differences was dropping Gonzalo Higuain. Mm-hmm. By starting Mario Mandzukic as the centre forward, I think that made a massive difference. And I just saw a more fluid and faster Bianconeri side.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Higuain, and it's constantly brought up in the media about his fitness, and he certainly hasn't started that well this season. Caterina, we know he's your favourite ex-Napoli player. So what are your thoughts on Allegri dropping him? As Vito said, it's probably the most fluid they've been in quite some time. So was it the right decision? And going forward, is he going to become a bench player?
Yeah, I believe that Allegri made the right decision, and he probably will be in the starting 11 on Wednesday against Olympiacos. But at the moment, he's not in his top form. He's not really himself this season. He was left out from the Argentina national team. And however, he made an assist when he came in. But I believe that, yeah, Mandzukic was more fluently on the pitch. And it's not the best period for him right now. But looking for Wednesday game, he probably will be in the starting 11.
Well, while we're comparing the two, there's a question that's come in on YouTube from Imran Khan. Is Dybala better than Mertens? I'll let either of you take that one.
Well, I'll have my say first. And look, statistically, you've got to say that Dybala has the upper hand. If you can score 10 goals in just 6 league games, especially in a league like Serie A, you have to be a really special player. But I enjoy watching both players as it is. So although Dybala should get the upper hand just on the basis of statistics, I mean, I'm sure either side in Serie A would be happy to have one of the two in their team, because they're both match winners and they're both players who can score goals out of nothing too. So, of course, each side will have the fans. They'll stick to their own player, but as a neutral, I enjoy watching both of them.
Yeah, it's they, as you mentioned, Vito, they are seem like very two different players very much so, and particularly playing in two very different teams, different strategies. Katarina, would you swap Mertens for Dybala if you could?
Yeah, only because it's from Napoli. No. No, I love Mertens, the way he's playing, and yeah, it's totally different because probably Mertens also run more than Dybala during all the game, and so it's, and also he's starting this new role just last year, and we have seen how he improved, and yeah, on the basis of the statistics, Dybala just scored 10 goals and Mertens 6. But the thing is that also the way of playing is different between Juventus and Napoli. We can see also Napoli have a lot more players who are scoring. And also, we have seen Gulam, Zielinski, and also they come from the midfield because it's the way of Sarri playing. And Juventus is probably now being linked more on Dybala, is probably reliant from him right now.
While just before we get to the Champions League matches up ahead, just another one I'll throw to you, Vito, quickly, another question that's come in. We mentioned Higuain. Basically, should Mandzukic be playing instead of him? Has he shown enough to have earned that place in the starting lineup?
Well, absolutely. I believe that Mandzukic is a harder worker than Higuain, and I'm sure a lot of people would be thinking the same too. And a guy like Mandzukic, he's a guy that can contribute to the team play. There are some players where you've got to set the team around them, and Mandzukic isn't that type of player as Higuain perhaps probably is. So I think with Mandzukic's involvement in open play, instead of just being a guy who's a fox in the box, I think that will benefit Mandzukic in the long term, and it could serve as a big wake-up call for Higuain.
I'm inclined to agree with you with that. I think Mandzukic, even last season, he was somewhat of an unsung hero. The amount of work he did in the background, as you said, for the team was quite substantial. So I think he's more than deserved of that starting position, for the time being at least. But looking ahead, we've got the midweek Champions League fixtures. Napoli are at home to Feyenoord and Juventus at home to Olympiacos. Both teams didn't get their campaigns off to the best of starts, but they'll be looking to get some victories. And you have to say that they probably should get the 3 points, the maximum points in these matches. Kat, I'll go to you first. Napoli at home to Feyenoord. I'm not going to say a must win, obviously. It's still early, but it's certainly a match that they have the ability to win.
Yeah, I agree. I believe they both, Napoli and Juventus, are favourites tomorrow. And they need to secure a win tomorrow, especially Napoli will have Manchester City in October, home and away. And maybe it will be more difficult probably tomorrow for Juve than Napoli. But in Champions, anything could happen. And the Feyenoord have lost the three of the last four games. In all competition, they didn't get a Champions League win in Europe, a win in 8 games. So Napoli have need to secure a win tomorrow, and probably at home will be easier. Indeed, Juve, I don't know, Olympiacos is struggling at the moment, and they also lost this weekend. And probably they could secure a win, and they need it. And so hope for both of them tomorrow. Could be a great games to watch.
Yeah, Vito, your predictions for both the matches quickly?
Well, I think for both games, the Italian side should have comfortable wins. So I expect Napoli to dominate against Feyenoord, and same thing with Juventus. I think, although it's only the second match day of the Champions League action, nothing more than a win would be acceptable against the opposition that the Italian sides are facing.
Okay, and just quickly before we move on, Kat, just because we have you on, I just wanted to ask, because it is still relevant to the race, I guess, where do Napoli's priorities lie? Because, I mean, in terms of how serious do they want to take the Champions League, if that possibly means taking away from a possible Scudetto challenge? Obviously, we know the fans love the Champions League being there, screaming the Champions anthem, but, you know, from Maurizio Sarri's perspective, is the Serie A a higher priority?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe the Serie A is the aim. And, well, of course, every team is going to play in Europe and in the Champions League. We lost some points in Serie A or vice versa. So we cannot hide that at the moment, for Sarri, his aim is the Scudetto. And we saw it also from the lineup against Shakhtar, that could be also a sign. And however, they put also a lot of energy in the second half during the last game. So I partly agree with that. But Sarri and the team have fight so much for this spot, and they know the champions always bring to the supporter. They gave strength to the team. It's something that, for the enthusiasm in Napoli, it's important to keep. And I believe they're going to fight in the round. And for sure, the priority is the Scudetto challenge. And tomorrow, it will be a good test for everyone.
Okay, so we will finish it off with Juventus and Napoli for the time being. They've obviously started Serie A in incredible fashion, so it'll be fascinating to watch them throughout this season. But moving on to possibly the biggest upset from the weekend, Sampdoria against AC Milan, where Samp finished 2-0 victors and still remain unbeaten. You'd have to say, by most accounts, it was quite the deserved win for the Blue Cerchiati. Vito, I'm going to throw it over to you. Take us through what happened.
Yeah, I must admit, for me, it was a bit of a nerve-wracking game, because it often happens in football where a team dominates possession or dominates the proceedings, even if you don't necessarily have all the control of the ball. But unfortunately, the opposition can score a goal against the one run of play and you get rewarded with nothing. Fortunately, though, Sampdoria managed to get the 3 points, and aside from my own bias, I think it was a well-deserved performance, because the Doriani really controlled the game. Marco Giampaolo got his tactics spot on, whereas Vincenzo Montella was made to look simplistic and incompetent. The great thing about this side now is that, although there have been some changes throughout the summer, it's Giampaolo's second season as Sampdoria coach, and he's finally getting his philosophy right. So the common thing was that Sampdoria would press AC Milan in the midfield, then the Rossoneri would turn the ball over, and we were creating a lot more chances in the first half. And Duvan Zapata, he was having a few opportunities to score himself, and I honestly felt that it could have been like 3 or 4 nil even before halftime with some of the chances that fell to our players. So, like, even Torreira had a chance to score, and even Gaston Ramirez, there was one part where he passed to Zapata, but he could have gone for glory himself outside of the box. And then in the second half, although the Rossoneri had a bit more possession, finally things came good for Samp. Although I must admit that the AC Milan players, they did more to provide the assist than the Samp players.
And You mentioned the midfield, and in a lot of ways they very much dominated a more fancied opponent. I believe you actually wrote an article on Lucas Pereira, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So if any of our listeners, they haven't had a chance to read it, do go ahead and read it, because Lucas Torreira was a standout performer in that game. And the interesting things about him is that he's 21 years old, but he plays like someone with greater maturity and a much smarter football brain than someone his age. So I love his tenacity and also how he just keeps things simple. And he's just a tireless runner too and a great competitor. So guys like him, they're not, you know, they're not always easy to find. And when you do have them, it's always great to have them fit and firing, because Torreira, despite not having a big profile, he's someone that could have won in a few years' time. And he really made the difference against those more established names in the Rossoneri midfield.
100%. When you look at the likes of, sorry, Kat, I'll come to you.
I agree. No.
but when you look at the likes of Lucas Bilha, who very rarely gets kind of dominated in that way, he's one of the most consistent players in Serie A, particularly last season for Lazio. And Torreira just gave him no space and no time, and completely just outclassed him. So it's rare you see that, and that shows, as you mentioned, Vito, from a 21-year-old, quite an incredible feat. So it'll be interesting to watch how he develops. Vito, I'm just going to stick with you quickly because, as I mentioned briefly, they are undefeated. They still have a game in hand. So is, to you as a Sampdoria fan and as a, I guess, a neutral Serie A fan, is this form that they're providing, is it a surprise? And where does it stand compared to some of the strong starts that we've seen in previous seasons? So to go back to 2014, after six matches, Sampdoria were on 14 points. They went on to finish seventh place that season. Mention they were one position behind Genoa, Vito. And in 2009, Samp actually led the league at this stage with 15 points, and I believe they went on to finish fourth in that season. So where does this sit? And, how much confidence do you have going forward?
I don't expect us to be challenging for the Scudetto, not even like the 2009 side, but I do think that reaching the Europa League is still a possibility for this team. One of the main differences between those two teams is that Giampaolo has that distinctive style of play. There's a more structured style, and I think the way he sets up the team allows his teams to be more solid defensively, but they're more able to press, and even the confidence on the ball has improved, because there are players like Edgar Barreto, who's a workhorse in midfield, but he can use the ball properly now under Giampaolo. The captain, Vasco Regini, didn't play in the game against Milan, but he's more comfortable in the centre-back role. And just generally throughout the team, I think compared to the sides under Luigi Del Neri and Sinisa Mihalovic, it's just better tactically and better technically too, whereas the other teams were a bit more workmanlike and dependent on certain individuals, whereas this team, everyone's got their role to play, but the way the team builds up possession and all that, and even the way it defends, everybody's making reliable contributions. And that's where I think Samp will remain strong. If everybody's playing their parts and doing it with effectiveness too, and they have the right work ethic, that will keep Sampdoria within the European spots.
Okay, just quickly before we move on to the other side of that result, Kat, I'll throw it over to you. Atalanta last season were somewhat of the fairy tale. Can you see Samp being playing the part this time around? How, from a neutral perspective, how do you see their form?
Yeah, sure. It could be, as you have seen the last season, everything can happen. So they have a decent squad. Gianpaolo made great work from last season. It's just a confirmation of his work with the team. And they deserved the win yesterday against Milan. And also making suffer the Milan's defense. We've seen Bonucci, we've seen Cristian Zapata, and the Rossoneri didn't even register a shot on target yesterday. That's probably the news from the match. And so, yes, I agree with that. They could be the new surprise of the Serie A.
Well, we'll throw it over to Milan because, as you mentioned, they didn't register one shot on target yesterday. Well, against Sampdoria on the weekend. So, Kat, I'll just stay with you. Is this a concern, these kind of losses, or is this the teething problems that we were kind of expecting Milan to have with such a new squad? So is it too quick to be criticising the likes of Montella, or has he actually been getting it wrong?
I believe it's a little bit too early, probably, to criticize him. We also talk about that. Of course, the transfer market has been a rebuild. It's been a rebuild for the team, for the manager. It's not easy for a coach to do a proper restructuring of a team in this little bit frame of time. And we need to consider also they've done the Europa League qualification in August. And so also to find the new solutions is not easy. I can say that probably they're going to fight for a Champions League spot. They improved a lot from last season. And it's quite usual now that they're going to need to find the new cohesion, the new balance. And probably the Europa League on this way could help them in the way of playing more and more and so doing probably better. Also, try to losing also some points, but they're probably going to play more and to find the right balance in the team. So I think it's too early right now to criticize him.
Yeah, well, when you look at some of the stats, and while they don't say everything, but the Rossoneri have actually conceded less shots than any other team, with the exception of Napoli. I think it's fair to say their presence in midfield has certainly improved, despite being outclassed by Sampdoria on the weekend. There's the beginnings of a solid defence there, and I guess if they could minimise a lot of those poor lapses and improve the cohesion. I mean, you've got the likes of Cristian Zapata, which is possibly another story altogether, but surely there's better things to come here, Vito.
I reckon that there are better things to come, but at the moment, Montella needs to have a greater understanding of the players at his disposal, because due to the big signings that they've made over the summer, it might take him a bit more time to realise who's the best in each position and each role. So I think anyone on social media who's calling for his sack, I think it's very premature, and he should at least see out the season, because we don't experience what it's like to coach these players every day. So Montella might see certain things in training, but what we see on match day could be two different things. If I really had to emphasise on one thing, or in fact two things, I think Cristian Zapata's got to be dropped for good, because if you needed more evidence, I would find that surprising that you would need to see Cristian Zapata make more mistakes, because...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
He's a shocking defender. And also, I think Hakan Çalhanoğlu has got to become more of a starter because he provides fantasy, he provides an X factor, and he's an excellent free kick taker too. And whenever he's played for AC Milan, he's looked absolutely dangerous. So I think that Montella's got to give him more of a chance or try to accommodate him in the team as much as possible. And one player that perhaps doesn't get enough scrutiny is Suso, because he tends to play a fair bit for AC Milan, but he can have a few off games too. So he might be due for some time on the bench.
I'll just stick with you for a second, Vito. Would you throw Andre Silva in there, who has also not been getting that much playing time? Do you think he warrants more of a start as opposed to Nikola Kalinic?
On the basis of what I saw a fortnight ago against Austria Vienna, he scored a world-taken hat-trick. So a lot of people can say that it was only Austria Vienna, but you still got to put the ball in the back of the net. And he looks a bit more mobile and lethal than Kalinic too, whereas Kalinic seems to be a guy who's just a fox in the box, a poacher, that guy that will just stay on the last defender. So perhaps Andre Silva can add a bit more speed or mobility than what Callum Lynch does. But I think, although I've talked about Zapata in defence and Çalhanoğlu in midfield, there's still other aspects of the team, like you just mentioned with the strikers, that need improving on. So I don't think it's just a matter of making one or two changes. There might be, you know, three or four or even more than that for the team to be far more cohesive and also be better organised in both phases of the game.
So it's going to be a bit of a waiting game for Milan, it seems, at least for the time being. And echoing Vito's thoughts, I think if Inter provided any example, it's that really need to allow a manager to develop with his team and actually have a chance at building some kind of cohesion there. So Rossoneri fans will no doubt be hoping for some improvement there. Although, you know, four wins out of six, it's, you know, if you read the media, you probably think it's a lot worse than it is. So I think this they shouldn't be panicking too much just yet. I think we will move on now to possibly somewhat of the forgotten team, Roma, who, of course, did finish, obviously got the Champions League qualification last season and finished second. They had a fairly easy day at the office, beating, you have to say, a fairly disappointing Udinese, who did gift a couple of those goals with the score finishing 3-1. They've only lost the one match to Inter in the Serie A this season, and even in that match, they did dominate for much of it. They've got a draw against Atletico Madrid, which I guess a lot of pundits weren't expecting. So the Giallorossi fans, is it fair to say they should be fairly happy with the start that Eusebio Di Francesco's made? Kat, I'll throw it over to you.
Yeah, totally agree. Di Francesco are making a decent job, especially against Atletico Madrid. They played really, really well. He can also improve, and he's a young coach, and he's just in 3 months. And he's doing a great work with the team at the moment. He quickly settled, and that's important. And so I think the Giallorossi now are quite happy to have him Probably the team is not perfect, not so enjoyable to watch, but they at the moment could improve. And also Dzeko made a great start, just scoring 6 goals. So for the beginning of the season, I wasn't so optimistic about Roma. And so now, I thought for a really bad start. Also, having seen the transfer market, but I wasn't expected this start from them. So Di Francesco sure is doing a great job.
Vito, going into this season, obviously Juventus and Napoli were the favourites. There was a lot of talk about AC Milan spending, and then Inter with the arrival of Luciano Spalletti. Were we too quick to write off Roma, given the coaching change and the Francesco Totti leaving, somewhat of a changing of guards? Were we too quick to write them off? And should we be considering them amongst the biggest challenges for the Champions League spots?
I must admit, I was one of those guys who had written off Roma before the start of the season, and that was because with Di Francesco coming in and also the arrival of Monchi from Sevilla as the sporting director, I thought this would be a year of transition for the Giallorossi. So far, they're looking quite impressive under Di Francesco. I don't think we have seen the best yet from the Giallorossi, but they are playing in an attacking style, which Di Francesco wants to see. And I think at the moment it's also a matter of them also getting the not just the shots on target, but just scoring more goals, because they are creating the chances, they are taking the shots. And obviously as the season progresses, they need to be a bit more accurate with the shooting, and also, just be more opportunistic in that aspect. One of the things I do like, though, is Stefan El Shaarawy is playing a bit more. So he scored 2 goals against Udinese, and it's good to see him contributing as well, because he's keeping Diego Perotti on the bench. He's not starting all the time. So if it's a matter of Di Francesco getting the rotations right and getting the bench players to make contributions, I think he can grow with more confidence as a coach, and the team itself can have more belief and self-esteem.
Definitely, and they're no doubt going to want some confidence and self-esteem going into their Champions League matches ahead. Obviously, they're in somewhat of the group of death, it's been labelled. But this week, they're away to Qarabag, the Azerbaijani outfit. So, Vito, you have to think if they are any chance of progressing through this group, they need 6 points and quite a few goals from the two fixtures against this club, with all due respect to Qarabag.
Oh, absolutely. With all due respect to Qarabag, I definitely think that Roma need to get the 6 points, because they could only draw at home to Atletico Madrid. And facing the like of Chelsea and Atletico is going to be a great task, especially for someone like Di Francesco, who's only had one season in Europe with Sassuolo. So it will be a big challenge for him, as well as the Giallorossi players. But if they can win by at least 4 or 5 goals in a similar way Juventus did to Dinamo Zagreb last year, it would be a great confidence boost. And also just looking forward as the competition progresses, they need those big wins.
Kat, are you confident they can put some goals past?
Yeah, hope so. Yeah, they need the 6 points at least.
Yeah, well, so, it was a tough start for the three Italian Champions League teams. None of them getting wins. So let's hope next week we'll be talking about three victories from the Serie A representatives. We'll move on from Roma and head over to the other Milanese giant, Inter, who left it late once again, relying on a late goal from Danilo D'Ambrosio. Sorry, just had mind blank. From D'Ambrosio. It was a header off a corner. by no means convincing. And Luciano Spalletti himself said that perhaps they have been too organized and need to be a bit more unpredictable. Kat, I'll go to you. Do you think that's a fair assessment? And do they need to kind of change things up a bit, or, you know, just continue developing, obviously, with the new coach at the helm?
Yeah, I think it's the same as AC Milan. They need to work on that. And, yeah, probably they are too organized right now. But at this stage, it's the start of the season, so they probably need to work more on that. We have seen Danilo D'Ambrosio. We also seen, yeah, probably Candreva's not the best of his form right now, but they have Karamov then came in, and we're going to talk it later. But the thing is that the team is playing well, so I was not so concerned about the way of playing. They need to work, and probably they're going to fight for a Champions League spot this year. It's evident. So hope for Spalletti. He also said that they don't have many players in the team who can take also and beat the opposite, but they have only Candreva and Perisic. And Perisic, yes, they played also really well. So they need to keep just the balance, work on that, and they're going to fight for the Champions League. I believe that.
Yeah. Kat, you mentioned Candreva there, and I'll throw to Vito for this, but certainly he's been copping a lot of criticism amongst Interisti for wasting a huge amount of opportunities. So the question is, does he still deserve a starting spot? Because he seems to, match after match, just he's one of the first selected, it seems, but he's certainly not providing the service the likes that Mario Icardi would certainly want. And as, again, you mentioned, Jan Karamoa made his debut and looked quite strong, provide a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and he has played a lot of right wing at KN. So, Vito, thoughts on Candreva, and should he be starting still?
Based on his club form, he doesn't deserve to be a starter, to be honest. For some reason, since he's arrived from Lazio, he seems to be, you know, very good with the national team, and he might have the odd international where he's a bit off, but his contributions for the Azzurri are solid. Whereas with Inter, I find that he's too simplistic, or just his ball use is far too predictable. So I think he's another player that's also due for time on the bench, because, you know, I like Candreva. He might not be as flashy or as unpredictable as some of the other wingers that are coming through for Italy at the moment, especially the younger ones. But, no, he's the guy that offers a lot of energy. He can chip in with a few goals occasionally. So I reckon perhaps he's due to, you know, be dropped and also get a wake-up call, because I think once he realises he's dropped, I do believe he can bounce back.
Kat, quick question. Yeah. Do you think... the likes of Karamau should deserve possibly a starting place in front of Candreva?
Yeah, it could be. Well, he made his debut yesterday, so he impressed, and that's evident. And he was also winning the corner that led for the goal. So looking at the future, is a promising player. He's talented, he's young, and it's in a good alternative for Spalletti also, if he needs to Candreva and have some breath for the following game. So that could be a good alternative also for in a prospective in Europe. But as Spalletti said, they don't want to put too much pressure on him, and I agree with that. So probably it's too early for a starter. I will try maybe some more games, and then maybe just in January, then they could try to have have him as a starter. So
I'd have to agree with you with that. And following on, I guess, from what Vito said, I think possibly, and it might be in Spalletti's mind, just giving him those minutes here and there might just have Kondreva looking over his shoulder and hopefully provide him that extra bit of motivation to get himself into gear and start producing in ways that he has often produced for the Azzurri. So we will move on from Inter for now and go through some of the other results. Fiorentina against Atalanta was an interesting one. It finished 1-1 thanks to a late equaliser from Remo Frulla. 12th minute, quite a nice strike from Federico Chiesa. Guys, both of you, Fiorentina, Atalanta, and then as we've discussed, Sampdoria, and you can throw Torino in there. They're kind of all in the realms of that behind the major teams, let's say, you know, with no disrespect meant, and possibly fighting for a Europa position. So I'm going to put you both on the spot and ask, out of those four teams, who do you think is most likely to clinch a Europa or a European qualification position? I'll start with you, Vito.
Well, for the time being, I'm still going to stick with my bias, and I still think that Samp should be able to get that spot just because of the balance within the team and also Giampaolo's organisation. I think that will be the most decisive thing for us. I reckon with the other teams, they can be a bit too inconsistent, and with Atalanta in particular, although they did get an impressive 5-1 win against Crotone in the midweek fixtures, I think the verdict's still out if they can still balance both the Serie A action and Europa League fixtures.
Kat, what do you think? Are you going to break Vito's heart?
No. No, I agree that Atalanta is going to lose probably some points for the Europe, but I don't know. On the way they're playing, Atalanta and Sampdoria are my favorites. So I would like to see a surprise. So Connor is gonna kill me now. I would like to see Sampdoria as the new surprise of the season. But on the way of playing, probably Atalanta is still getting there now. They probably on the way. I don't know if they're gonna lose some points, but yeah, Atalanta or Sampdoria. So it could be a reconfirmation or a new surprise of the of the league.
Okay, you've heard it here first: Sampdoria or Atalanta for a Europa League qualification. Going on to the big teams, I guess you could say, who has finished fifth last season and one of the most consistent clubs in Italy, Lazio, with another strong win, 3-0 over Verona. And Ciro Immobile once again has been absolutely superb, grabbing a brace and I believe an assist as well. But even beyond that, he's been so important in the build-up of their attack. Behind Dybala, I think it's fair to say he's been the form attacking player in the league. I think we have spoken about Lazio and Immobile in previous weeks, so we'll leave them there for now. But some of the other results: Chievo defeated Cagliari 2-0, Sassuolo 1-0, and of the big southern matchup, Crotone defeated Benevento 2-0. That was Squali's first win of the season. Vito, they've got the first victory now. Can you see them doing the impossible again and surviving Serie A or surviving relegation?
At the moment, I think they're having the same sort of issues as last season. They still got a few teething issues to deal with, you know, getting the squad to gel, and the players need to understand Nicola's tactics a bit more. But in keeping the same system and having similar type of players, they could still have that second half late run and put things together near the end and survive relegation. I thought the goals scored were excellent goals too, like Rolando Mandragora's volley was sensational, and I'm sure the Juventini, if they're keeping an eye on him because he's on loan from Juventus, I think they'd be happy with that. And even the second goal by Roden was an excellent team goal. That back heel from Marcello Trotta was absolutely excellent. It was like he wasn't even looking and he just back heeled in the space for Roden to just run in. So, you know, one of the provincial teams, but, you know, just as sensational as any goal you could see from the bigger teams in the division. And the other thing I would probably point out, if Crotone are going to survive in Serie A again, I think it's because Benevento, with all due respect to them, still look like a Serie B side with the squad they have. And also Hellas Verona, I'm going to say that they'll probably be one of the favourites to be relegated because, as I said last week, I do not rate Fabio Pecchi as a coach. I think Davide Nicola is a superior tactician to him.
Interesting. Kat, poor Benevento.
I feel so sorry.
They're trying so hard. They almost got a result last week. I thought
it's a little bit unlucky for the injuries for them.
I thought maybe in the Campania derby, maybe Napoli might go easy on them. But no, six goals just completely annihilated them. Yeah. Is there any hope? Any hope at all to see the Campania derby stay in Serie A for next season?
I hope so, but at this time, I see it's quite difficult. Yeah, the 0 point is the worst in Europe, the worst in Europe at the moment. So I feel so sorry for them because I loved last year seeing them in Serie B. And yeah, unfortunately, with Napoli, there was either no shot in the target. So hope for the following games. Maybe some point the next game is against Inter. So I don't know. Quite difficult.
Yeah. Well, a few of us here at FIF try and support the southern teams as much as possible. So let's hope, well, I certainly hope, and I'm sure you do too, that the Campanias and the Calabrese clubs can continue to represent as much as possible in Serie A. So, but certainly it's not looking too good for Benevento at the moment. Guys, I think that actually wraps it up for this week. How did I go?
Perfect.
Just contain your enthusiasm, guys. Don't be
good work, Nick.
Hopefully I did an okay job. I'm not sure what's happening next week. I'm not sure when Connor's back, but I'm sure in soon enough you'll hear the beautiful tones, Irish tones of Connor back on in your ears. That about does us, Vito. Thank you for waking up early in Australia, as always. And
you're welcome.
Thank you for making your big debut, and hopefully you'll be joining us much more often.
Yeah, obviously.
Quickly, guys, your Twitter accounts that people can find you and follow you and hear your amazing commentary of Serie A. Vito, go first.
Okay. Well, my Twitter handle is at Vito C. Doria, so check me out there.
And Kat?
On Twitter as Caterina Mirra.
And you can find me at Nick Z. Carroll. And, of course, this is the Forza Italian Football Podcast, so be sure to follow on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. If you haven't already, check the YouTube page and subscribe, because we not only stream the podcast live every week, but we also have a number of other videos which myself, Vieri, and of course Caterina is featuring on. So check that out as much as you can. And if you would like to support what we're doing, we are all of course voluntary. We do this for the love of the game. So if you'd like to support us, please head over to the Forza Italian Football Patreon page. You could find the links below if you're watching on YouTube, and give us anything that you can spare. It simply goes back into the product and helps us to develop the FIF brand and provide us a better commentary for the viewers. So that does it for us. Thank you for putting up with me for this week. And I'm sure someone, me, Connor, will see you again next week. So from Vito, Kat, and myself, ciao for now.
Ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.